Okay, here we are. Welcome.
And hi, everyone. I'm podcaster extraordinaire Trip Mitchell filling in. I had the experience. Enough about you, Paul, and this goddamn heart attack. You are really just so myopic about this thing.
No,
your daughter, Susan, came and was a guest on our podcast. Let's do something even if it's wrong. And in typical Susan fashion, she is now, I think, hosting the show, and we're all her guest. It is unbelievable. She stepped in, and it was a lot of fun. But all joking aside,
she is your niece.
She can yak, but
she learned a lot from you.
She can yak, and she did a great job, and we would love to have her each week because we've got a heck of a crew. But I expected a lot of sympathy. I had my shoulder replaced, and then you go off and have a heart attack just to outdo me.
I know.
You're
welcome.
So what is that? So tell me about it. Start at the beginning. When did you realize that, ruh-roh, things are going bad?
Well, this was 2 weeks ago, Thursday night. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning I got up.
I'm going to be a real asshole. Can you get a little closer to the mic?
Thanks.
It's your show. I'm telling you what to do. What a douche.
You're a good friend, Trip. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. I got up. I felt, I thought I had a little indigestion or something, you know. I mean, that's kind of what I thought it was. So I went in the other bedroom, and I took my computer in, I was watching like some old Scrubs episode or something like that to kind of just...
Ironically.
Ironically, yeah. It kind of ebbed and flowed for a little while, and then it kind of came back stronger, and then I started noticing this is not just indigestion, this is something much stronger, and because it was focused in my chest, and it was a cramping feeling, and I'd had some of these feelings years and years ago. I'm talking 15, 20 years ago or so. I'd had something like this, and went and had it checked out, but it was sort of a stress attack kind of thing. And so I kind of thought that's kind of what it was initially. And then I'm going, cause I've been under a lot of stress recently, and then, or I've created a lot of stress in my life recently is what I should say. Just this, something was different about it. And I went in to wake up Kristen, and I said, you know, I'm not feeling well. I've got cramps in my chest, and it's painful. And then I kind of said, and I think I'm going to go throw up. And so I went in dry heaved in the bathroom for a little bit. Nothing came up because I hadn't eaten in, you know, 10 hours or something like that. And but Kristen kind of like, that kind of woke her up, and she decided at this moment, we just need to go right to the emergency room because throwing up and chest pains, and she went right to heart attack. And I didn't, I kind of was thinking
that. Did she drive you?
She did. She drove me. Yeah.
Because you're 5 minutes away from Altaview.
Yeah, we're five minutes away from Altaview, which was fine. So we get in the car. She drives me down. I walk in. I tell them my symptoms. They just open the double doors, you know, take me into the back. Within seconds, I had three people working on me.
So it's when I was the night of the Gore Bush election, I got cut open playing hockey. I go to the emergency room, and it took me 8 hours to get seen. And when the girl, the physician, saw me, she goes, "It's always good to be served last at an emergency room."
Oh, seriously?
Okay. Conversely, and it was kind of cool because I watched the whole election thing. Got served about 4 a.m. So if you got served first, that's not a good sign.
Well, let me put it this way. Yeah, it's probably true, but there was nobody in there. I mean, this was by now 4 o'clock in the morning, and there were patients in there, but they were back already being treated. There was no one in.
But if you have symptoms of a heart attack, you're getting served number one.
They just pulled me back, and yeah.
So they ran your insurance, and it came through okay. What is the first thing they did?
So at that point, they started taking my blood pressure. They started pulling blood. They started running an EKG. This is all within minutes. They started this. And the EKG showed that I had AFib, or atrial fibrillation, which means that my heart was not beating regularly, which was a concern. And then,
if you want to learn more about AFib, watch any of the evening news shows, because it seems that's all they're sponsored by.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. And then the blood work came back, and that showed that I had an enzyme in it, and I can't even remember what it was right now, but it's the enzyme that, that means that the heart has, there has been a heart attack. And so those enzymes get released by the heart when there is a heart attack. So that was, it was low, but so it wasn't too much, but they said, at this point, we've got to get you to a cath lab, a hospital with a cath lab, because, you know, we don't know how serious this is, and they need to monitor this and check this and decide whether this can be treated with medication or not, or whether you're going to have to, you know, go in and have an angiogram or something else more serious even at that point. And then that's when the insurance got, came back, and they said, well, you know, that, that's a Select Health place, and you know, you have Blue Cross Blue Shield, the Regents policy, and so we ended up going to St. Mark's. And
did they, you take an ambulance over?
Yeah, they said, yeah, you can't. I was already on some blood thinners at that point. They'd had an IV in me, and I was on blood thinners, and so they said, you just need to stay on this, and they're going to send you over there. So
now, an ambulance ride when you're in the back.
It's
kind of sucky, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I'd never been in the back before because I'd been in with Kristen twice when we had our kids. So both times I think she was – no, she was life-flighted once.
Life-flighted?
Yeah, from Altaview to – yeah, yeah.
With, why?
With, I think, Caden.
Why was she life-flighted?
Because she started hemorrhaging. Yeah.
Wow. So you get over to St. Mark's, which is a great hospital.
And we still are.
Yeah. So you get to St. Mark's. What do they do there?
Well, they got me kind of – I mean, it was – they just wheeled me in and got me set up real quickly in just the emergency room.
The maitre d' let you through?
The maitre d' let me through. They got me a table right away in the emergency room.
By the kitchen?
By the kitchen. Okay. And then and they got me upstairs within 20, 30 minutes. It was pretty quick. They did give me, by the way, I did 3 nitroglycerin pills at the at Altaview because they wanted me to see if I could get the cramping and the pressure on my heart down. So they gave me the first one, and it did a little bit, but not much. And they gave me another one. But it does feel kind of a little bit like electrical shocks going
really?
Off in your mouth a little bit. Yeah. Yeah, I have a funny story about that. I'll tell you in just a minute. By the third one, I took the third one, and it basically the pain was beginning to subside at that point.
How much pain were you in prior?
Just the cramping. I didn't think it was that bad. On a scale of 1 to 10, I put it around a 5 or 6. You know.
Was there any concern? So once they said you've had a heart attack, that obviously is not a stress lowering phrase.
No, you're right, it's not. In fact, I had a bit of an existential moment where I began to, you know, contemplate, well, if, you know, if anything happens or this is it or something goes wrong and you know, this is, you know, I'm kind of prepared for this. And I had kind of come to peace with the idea a while ago that if something were to happen to me that, you know, I kind of lived a I know this sounds funny. I've lived a life that I feel good about. That I've done my best. That I've had my ups and my downs. And you know,
I'm singing Sinatra.
I won't. Even though I'd love to, but my voice, you know, nobody wants that. So
would you say? So getting back to Altaview. So you're in a situation where your insurance, ridiculously enough, but that's the way the system we have.
Yeah, I mean,
you've got good care, but it's. It's got to be a little kind of an FU moment, like, my God, I had a heart attack, and now you want to stick me in a vehicle.
Well,
and
I
wake
mean, they,
everyone
no,
up.
They were going to stick me in a vehicle anyway to take me to a cath lab at Intermountain AMC.
Oh, down on
yeah,
in
yeah,
Murray.
Yeah, yeah. Just down the road from here. Because that would they didn't have a cath lab there at Altaview. So and I jokingly told Kristen, you know, let's go to Lone Peak because you know, just in case, you know, I end up having to stay there for longer. I do have a 3 o'clock meeting that afternoon at administration at Lone Peak, and if they can just come down and see me down in my room if need be, you know.
Much more convenient. Now when you when you get to St. Mark's and they wheel you up to the room, could you tell the difference? I mean, at St. Mark's, were they more serious? This is what they do, or how does that work?
No, they were – I mean, I think generally most of the people I was around were really calm. I mean, for the most part. There were I mean, there were a few people that, and I'll tell you a little bit later about the story with the cut, you know, where they went in the little 3-millimeter cut they made on my, the artery on my arm, the vein on my arm, and went in, and they, there were all these horror stories the nurses were telling about that. When the doctor came in, and afterwards he said, yeah, you don't have to worry about that. And because they're all going, you can't, if it opens up and bleeds, you know, you've got to call 911, 911 if any time that cut opens up, because he's got all these blood thinners in him.
Oh,
and he's just
going to start. Yeah, yeah.
So he won't stop bleeding. And so we're finally going through the last, you know, meeting with the doctor as I'm being discharged. And Kristen goes, so tell me, is this, you know, is this what we've been told? And how serious is this and that kind of thing? And he takes his thumb and he goes, what you do if that happens is you take your thumb and you put it on top of the cut like this and just hold it there for a few minutes.
That would be easier than calling 911.
He goes, because, you know, that would be like, you know, that. I think it was him that said, that'd be like, you know, calling 911 because they got your order wrong at McDonald's or
something.
Okay,
well, you know, in this age of suing everyone, you know, there's so much cover your ass materials in a hospital. So what was the next step? So you're up in a room.
So I'm up in the room. And they take my blood again. I actually take it a couple more times in the next few hours, but they took it again. And the doctor came in and talked to me, and he explained, you know, what they were going to do. They're going to monitor me for a little bit. They're going to check my blood again. If the levels of the hormones in the blood have gone down, they'll probably treat it with medication overnight and watch me and see how things are. If it's gone up, then probably they're going to take me, if it's gone up at all, probably they're going to take me down and take a look. If it's gone up a lot, they're going to take me down and do an angiogram and then go in and find out where what's going on, because there are probably some blockages. And it sounds like this heart attack is more serious. So I was around 0.5, I think, of the levels of this hormone in my blood. And when the blood work came back the first time, they said it's up to a 1.6.
So, like a DUI language, that's bad.
Yeah, that's bad. So, I mean, and literally, and there was a woman in there, the people were really nice. There was a woman in there that was about to do like a sonogram around my heart to kind of just see what it looked like and if there was any damage or any kind of things. And she's just about ready to start, and they go, no, we're taking them down right now. So, I mean, the guy from the cath lab was there, ready to go, as soon as, because he had the blood work. He got it back, and the doctor said, bring him down now. And so I just got moved to the front of the line, which was kind of nice. You know, that was, you know, good service.
Yeah.
Good service. I went down, and they gave me really good drugs, a combination of Ativan and fentanyl. And I was awake the whole time, and I was lying on the table, and they have your arm strapped down, so you're not moving anything around. And obviously, because they went in through my arm, they went in on my wrist, on my right wrist.
They put the thing up your arm into your heart.
Yeah, right up to your heart, and look around and scope it out and make sure everything, you know, is
how
okay.
How do they – so they pick – they're not amateurs on this, so they pick the right artery that they know is going to go to your heart, which, as I'm asking this question, I'm thinking it through ahead of time, which is not normal
operating.
This
is probably not an eeny, meeny, miny, mo situation.
No. But it occurs to me all arteries go to the heart. So pretty much if you get an artery and you don't go to your fingertips, you're going to your heart.
Right,
okay.
Right, yeah.
So they run this thing in.
He seemed to know where he was going.
Yeah. And so the guy's got the little – do you remember what was the movie with Raquel Welch where they shrunk the scientist down to get into a guy's heart? This was back in the 60s.
Oh, my God.
I'll think of it halfway through the show. But it was like a spy or something, and they wanted to save his life. So they miniaturized a submarine. And Raquel Welch.
It wasn't like the 50-foot tall woman or something.
No.
That's a different one.
This was a
classic. No one's got shrunk down in that film.
So anyway, so they go into your heart, and you're awake while someone is putting an...
Yeah, I was awake the whole time. In fact, I was watching it on screen. I was watching this on screens.
And how'd your heart look?
From what I could tell, of course, I was a little, you know, under the influence, which was fine. I was not panicked or upset or anything, I should say. I was feeling very calm. From what I could tell, I mean, I'm not an expert by any means, it looked like something that was beating.
Okay, that is a very good sign. And you said the staff was great, and
was great.
Yeah, and that was my impression. I mean, we are so lucky. Salt Lake is a great medical town.
We are a great medical town. We have, and I was going to go to St.
Except for
Mark's.
The case a couple weeks ago where the poor kid is coming in to get treatment at Primary Children, and he gets shot at a Smith's.
Well, that wasn't that. Yeah,
I mean, that was not you know, relating to the medical care, but you know, come to Salt Lake, you end up getting shot by accident. But anyway, getting back to your heart, so what happens after? So they go inside your heart.
They found the blockages. Okay, that was pretty simple because they put dye in me. So they gave me a couple doses of dye, and so they start X-ray cameras, motion cameras around, and they're moving them around to get these different views. And that's what I can see on the screens are the views. And you can see where, because of the dye, where the blockages are. Like, it's only going up to a certain point, and there's only a little bit coming out or whatever. And there was one that was like, I mean, and I didn't find this all out till afterwards. I mean, he would come over and talk to me once in a while and tell me what he was doing. Because, I mean, he was the screens were to my left, he was to my right, and he kept leaning over and putting his arms on me as he's kind of trying to clean things out. I mean, I could feel, you know.
So he actually used that to clean out the blockages?
I don't know what they're using to clean out the blockages, but they're whatever the tools are that they have. I mean, they go in and they put the stents in, and then they start working on everything in there.
Oh, I didn't realize that's how. I thought it was like a separate surgery.
No, they put the stents. Everything happens. It's all the same. It's really remarkable, actually, what they do. And he had one that he was really concerned about, and he spent a lot more time on it. When I think it was the one that was the most blocked, too, it was over 90% blocked. That's serious. That's to the point where, I mean, I heard people talk about this afterwards. So did you have a widowmaker? And I go, no, I never passed out or anything like that.
What's a widowmaker?
I guess that's the one where, you know, you're so clogged up that if you don't get immediate care and have an intervention, that you'll die. So a lot of times bypasses are considered widowmakers and those kinds of things. Or if you have anything between 90 and 100% blockage, I guess. This is what I've been told. And I didn't know these terms until this all happened. So this is kind of new for me as well.
And again, widowmaker should have been pretty... Yeah, you don't have to be a Mensa candidate to figure out that that's bad.
Yeah, yeah. So I had people coming up to me afterwards saying, oh, yeah, my mom just had a widowmaker. And I'm going... What?
How long were you in this procedure?
A little over an hour and a half, almost 2 hours.
Did you have a good sense of time awareness, or did it all just seem like a blur afterwards?
I had a pretty good sense of time and awareness. You can't feel anything, by the way. There's no feeling. There's no nerves inside your arteries. So you don't feel anything happening until they would come in and bump into the heart or something, and then I'd feel it, you know, or I'd feel it on my wrist, you know, the nerves around the artery where he was doing all the work. But I couldn't feel anything inside until he would bump into something that had muscle tissue or something on it.
Did you know? How was the doctor's bedside manner?
He was amazing. Yeah.
So the one thing you don't want to ever.
Yeah, Gennady, he was so good. I was like, I felt like I couldn't have had a better doctor. I walked out of there thinking I lucked out. You know.
And that's funny about all of us, because when we have a procedure, whatever you're having, mm-hmm. and mostly. As you're younger, it's mostly orthopedic, and it's always my knee doctor is the best doctor in the world. My aunt, you know,
yeah,
everyone thinks so. But if you get out of a procedure like that and you feel like you were really lucky,
mm-hmm.
you were.
Yeah. Well, and I do feel that way. I mean, in that first of all, that we got to the hospital as quickly as we did, that Kristen reacted quickly, and that then they sent me up to St. Mark's because I was at St. Mark's by. I don't know, 7:30 or something like that in the morning. I was in surgery by 9, or in the cath lab by 9.
So within 4 or 5 hours of waking up,
mm-hmm.
you had already had a procedure.
Yeah, I think so. 4 or 5 hours, somewhere in there.
God bless. And,
yeah.
And you know, what's funny is when people look at areas to retire, you know, they go to these small towns, but the challenge you have if you're getting up there, you need to be close to great medical care.
Yeah.
You really, it just flat out, you know, if you were, let's say, out in Roosevelt or something, you're not having this outcome more. I mean, they've got
sure, there is an IHC hospital there. It's just it's a very small hospital.
Exactly.
Yeah, and they don't have a cath lab there.
Yeah, so you're spending a lot of time on the road. So all of a sudden, so everyone's freaking at this point.
So, well, but not all the nurses and the doctor, they're all fine. In fact, the guys down in the lab with me, he had two assistants, like medical assistants. And, you know, they're also, I mean, I thought they're listening to music and shit. And
well,
you know, and they're having, and I mean, the atmosphere there between them is, I mean, they're almost like speaking code language. It's like they're almost in their own language, and you could tell that they're all focused, almost like one mind. It was fascinating to watch. And I'm under the influence, and I'm still picking this all up and seeing how their interplay is. And that was part of one of the great things too. Is I remember I kept trying to look over, you know, because when they would move me around, or he'd move the screens around sometimes, and I couldn't always see them well, but 90% of the time I did. And one of the most fascinating parts of that was watching him. I could feel him when he was like, you know, trying to push through or open something up or try to unclog something. I could feel him pushing on it and trying to clean something out.
So what happens to the stuff that's in your arteries that's clogged?
It hopefully moves through. Yeah, I mean, there's no way to kind of shovel that up and sweep it up.
So they just literally scrape the artery wall to get rid of this impediment, the plaque or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And what, you know, the amazing part of this is that you've got maybe...
It could all be in my foot right now, for all I know. You know,
but you've got six or seven...
I haven't had any gout, so...
6 or 7 people who were sleeping somewhere in the Salt Lake Valley when you had this. Go into work at St. Mark's. Get together as a team, have you go to the front of the line, and have saved your life by 9, and they haven't even had a cup of coffee yet.
Yeah.
It's astounding.
I'm going to think I'm thinking the medical assistants definitely. I don't know if the doctor did, but I think they were coffee types, so.
Okay.
They probably grind. One guy grinded his own beans, I'm pretty sure. He had a pretty nice shirt on.
Okay. Like, well, they come
Hawaiian.
Hawaiian coffee is.
No, Hawaiian shirt.
Okay, Hawaiian Kona coffee is way overrated, but that's we'll talk about that on my podcast. But so all of a sudden you have this procedure, you have no pain at all except when they bump into you.
Mm-hmm.
When they're done, do they give you kind of a look like, I think we nailed this? Or?
He comes over and talks to me. I mean, he came over a couple of times and said, this is what I'm doing. Just want you to know. And I go, I'm watching. You know, I said, I'm watching it. He goes, oh. He goes, most people don't do that.
Yeah.
But I said, I'm really interested in this. And so I could kind of see what he's doing. I could see every time the blockage was like it was freed, and all of a sudden it's like the part of the veins that or the part of the arteries there that were not getting any blood flow to them, all of a sudden would just darken with this color, you know, you could see the dye.
Could you
the
feel
contrast. I didn't notice it feel any difference until probably a little bit later. I mean, I think I was getting more oxygen to the brain too at that point because, you know, the flow that probably I think it's partly because I was under the influence, you know, fentanyl. You know, I mean, I thought everything was great in that time.
Fentanyl. Yeah, I'm not super up on the drug thing.
Well, fentanyl is a very strong opiate. It's near the top.
Isn't it the one that kills people?
Fentanyl and carfentanil, the two that have the most overdoses with right now. And I have had, I mean, I say this, and I don't, that's why, you know, I was careful even to talk about this, but I just because I've had clients who have overdosed on fentanyl and heroin, both. But people die from all different kinds of opiates. It's not just one particular one.
Did you say to them that you maybe have an addiction issue and that you want to go light on the painkiller?
No. I mean, they asked me if I wanted them afterwards that night. And no, I didn't. I mean, I didn't. The only time I used any pain medication was during the procedures. And the next day I had some more procedures. And they took my blood a couple more times. They took it again that evening, and they took it again the next morning. So I had four or five. I think I had 5 pulls in the.
And when did you get out of the hospital?
So I stayed overnight, and then the next.
This happened on Thursday.
I got out Friday afternoon. Late Friday afternoon. I woke up Friday morning, And they were told me they were going to do some different procedures at that. They were going to do the echocardiogram and then the one where they, esophageal, where they put the camera down your throat and check out your heart from the esophagus, because I guess it's right next to the heart, so they can get some really good images from there. They wanted to, the doctor wanted to do that because he wanted to shock my heart back into its regular rhythm, so get me out of AFib. And so that started like 8 o'clock in the morning. I mean, they came in and go, okay, we're gonna go do that. And I was like, wait, you know, I'd been up for a while, but it's the same kind of thing. And they took me in and took me into this room, and I didn't even get out of it. I mean, it was in the same bed I was in. I'd been in, so I didn't have to move anything. It wasn't like when I went down to the cath lab. And so I went in, and there was a little wait there because there was a little miscoordination on the meds, because again, they were gonna sedate me a little bit with a propranolol derivative. They told me it was a brand new drug based upon propranolol, which was, you know, Michael Jackson's favorite sleep aid.
And it worked.
And it worked. And they gave me this. I mean, again, I was up, I was awake the whole time. But as soon as they gave it to me, I'm sure I smiled, even though I had a mouthpiece thing in, you know, just because I felt it. I felt calm and good and said, okay, you know, put that thing down my throat.
There's a reason they call them drugs.
That's right.
They make you feel good, which is not good.
So they shaved my chest, by the way, because they put the pads on them, you know, from the
if you're a
defibrillator.
Dick. Yeah, if you're a dick, they don't. Put those things on there and have some fun.
Yeah, that's true. So they put those on, and then as soon as he got done with the camera that was down my throat, down my esophagus, he pulled that out, and then within less than a minute, they shocked me. I mean, it was just like, okay, here we go. I heard him, tell her, you know, crank it up to this, and I'm sitting there looking at it, and I'm just going, all of a sudden, just like everything just went white, just and then there I was.
So then your heartbeat is back to its normal rhythm?
Back to normal, yeah.
So what did they tell you? You get out, you go home. What are the instructions? So they've got you on 3 or 4 meds.
Well, 6. I mean, you know a little of this trip is that I'm not a med guy. I don't take drugs. You know, for any kind of health, I just have never really had any health issues. This is probably that other underlying thing you and I talked about earlier, too, that, you know, we can talk about is, you know, where did this come from? Because this is, I mean, that's a lot of blockage. I had 3 stents put in. 2 of them were blocked at 80% and 1 was 90 plus. So this is some serious buildup and some serious issues. Now, I've had physicals every year for the past 3 years, and the last 2 years that I've had my physicals, everything, the blood work, everything came back fine. I was a little high on the cholesterol this last time, but it was not, you know, something they weren't that worried about. They were going to thought of put me on statin or something if it didn't, they were going to check me out, so, you know, in 6 months. So, like, when I got out of the hospital, I got a thing in the mail from my doctor saying, we're going to have you come in now and do your blood work again to see how your cholesterol is. And then Kristen called him and said, well, he just got out of the hospital after a heart attack. So they'll send you all that information. So.
Yeah, well, it's like your doctor might have missed.
That's yeah, right. Well, this is where I said, this is where partly it's I'm accountable for this somewhat, because one is the thing about denial, and we talk about denial a lot on this show, is, you know, when people are learning to deal with struggles of substances or beliefs or behaviors in their life that they're, you know, that they're, you know, trying to figure out a way to do differently. One of the things that I had, my physicals were done the last 2 years, was while I was doing this diet Whole30. And so I, you know, dropped some weight during this time. My blood was in a good place. My diet was, you know, immaculate.
So basically...
So I flew under the radar for probably 2 to 3 years with probably hypertension 10 months out of those years. And also then stress related from work, and then maybe some, you know, dietary stuff. But I still eat more of a whole foods diet, and I have as long as I've known you, which is, you know, I mean,
35 years.
Yeah, 35 years at least. You know, I've eaten more of a whole foods diet. And then of course I did tell them, you know, that yes, I abused cocaine off and on for 25 years, you know, that there is a piece of that. Well,
maybe but that typically doesn't affect cardiac.
Well, no, it is. It does affect the heart, though. I mean, the long-term,
you know,
long-term cocaine abuse.
Just as I said that, again, it's a Friday. He realizes that John Entwistle died at the Hard Rock in Vegas.
You and I talked about this on the show, yeah.
Doing blow off a hooker.
Yeah.
So when I said it doesn't affect it, what am I, nuts?
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Cocaine.
By the way, I've never done blow off a hooker, just so you know.
Good to get that out on the surface. I would imagine now that I think about it, coke is probably the worst thing for your heart.
Yeah, it is. It's not good for it. It's definitely not good for it.
How about weed?
There are studies that and again, I've looked into this, but not enough. Most of the research that's been done with cannabis and or medical, you know, marijuana and cardiac issues come out of two countries, Israel and Germany. Most of and there has been shown that a combination of CBD and THC does seem to help with the healing of certain.
So we have a CBD store that sponsors the morning show.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And it's...
Because there's all sorts of shit out there. There's plenty of spice that's actually... They're cannabinoid derivatives. They call it CBD, but... We have people in treatment that use this stuff, and you can't test for it, but it fucks them up bad.
Well, and that's what Holly was talking about today, is we're on Green Horizons or Blue... Or Green Horizons mm-hmm. is our sponsor. And evidently, there was a store up in Park City that sold some stuff about 2 months ago that people got really screwed up on. And what I don't understand is if you're making a little derivative oil and you need something to... You know, in the cocaine day, baby laxative, they'd cut it with.
Yeah, I know.
To add weight to it. Why not put water in? Why do you have to put something bad into this oil?
Well, this is. Let me help you with this, because I have an associate who is a chemist in their other life. And what most of this comes out of these cannabinoid derivatives that are similar to things like spice. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're calling CBD. So you buy a bottle. I mean, one of the bottles that one of my clients showed me just said XXX on it. And it just said CBD oil.
Oh.
And that's all it said on it. There were no certifications, no nothing. I said, don't ever, ever take anything that isn't certified or registered, you know, as far as some company goes that is regulated to produce.
You know who's a douchebag? Orrin Hatch. Because this state... is got more people doing more these oils. You know, we've got
We are a huge nutraceutical state, and essential oils and nutraceuticals here are huge. And we should be doing
And Orrin Hatch has used his influence in the Senate and his seniority to basically block a lot of government research and control, and these guys are all cowboys, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to denigrate all of them. You know, it's the old line about 99% of these make the other 1% look bad, but most of this stuff is useless.
Sure.
Yeah. The opinions just uttered are by Trip Mitchell, not just another bozo on the bus, but come on, these guys, you know, they tell, and I've seen the doTERRA when they have the convention down at the Salt
House. You know, my wife is a doTERRA.
Kristen, I'm sorry I got drunk before I came over. I don't mean any of this, but
I know you're not drunk. That's nice try though.
Well, it's
not drunk on alcohol, but
it seems to me that
no, I understand what you're going. This whole idea with Hatch. I mean, he did a lot for the nutraceutical industry because
he didn't put any. I mean,
it got deregulated in some ways. It got regulated in other ways, but it got deregulated in others.
And not to say that people don't get benefits from, you know, doTERRA or what's the other one, Young Living.
Yeah,
Young Living.
Yeah, is one of them. There are a bunch of them.
Actually. Yeah, and you know, we've got all the other multi-level marketing, and if it provides benefit for you, God bless. Whatever gets you through a day. But I think that if people are looking at these nutraceuticals as being a savior, mm-hmm. you can, and they're all the same, meaning that their marketing is all, if they go through multi-level marketing, it's identical. And we've been joking, our producer, about doing a water from Peru called Ethereal Water. And we can...
Ooh.
I mean, we came up with it on the air and came up with the whole program, how we're going to market it. Mm-hmm. And...
Well, you have some experience with it.
I do. And my sister, your ex-wife, literally invented flavored mineral water. I mean, so... And I drink, you know, club soda or, you know, from Smith's because I'm cheap, you know, every day.
The Kroger brand's fine. Yeah. They have a good lime.
Oh, yeah.
And lemon and something else.
I don't do it with, you know, because Mary invented it. I'm rebelling. But there are so many products in Utah County that, you know, go to market. And I don't doubt that the people who use them believe in them. But there hasn't been any tangible. And... You know, circling around to the pharmaceutical industry, they'll come up with a new drug and they'll do all their studies on it, and it might have a 5 or 6% advantage over the existing drug, cost 8 times as much.
Yeah.
And so we've got some real challenges in that.
True. Well, you know, and speaking of that, so I went from taking no drugs, right, in my life to taking 6. The 6th one is actually nitroglycerin, and that's to be taken if I have pains in my heart.
So where is it now?
It's in my I left it on. Yeah, I left the little bottle. It's a little tiny bottle with these little tiny pills in it.
Where'd you leave it?
I left it on my bedside table before I was changing.
So let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
How is that going to benefit you now? So that might be one of those things that you do.
I usually keep it in my little pocket in my jeans. So.
Just a thought. Maybe you should keep it near your keys.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just
okay.
When I get home, I'll get, you know, advice like this. So you're on 6 things. Is it taking your energy away? What is the?
It's definitely causing some changes, or has created some changes for me. 3 of them are blood thinners. And one of those being baby aspirin, which I used to be allergic to, by the way. But I took it 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 10 years ago now in the desert, and nothing happened. So I realized I wasn't. I took it again since then a couple times. So I'm on that, and then I'm on a couple other things, a form of lisinopril, and another one, then on a statin, and then on a cholesterol medication. And by the way, blood thinners, talk about a product that was so many drugs that were originally blood thinners are now other things. I don't know if you know what one of the most famous one is. It's Viagra. Viagra was a blood thinner that was taken for decades. And then they also found that men, you know, thinning the blood seemed to help them with their erections.
Well, and this morning we talked about I am going to get Botox on a future show, and I didn't realize that Botox was a headache medication.
Yes, yeah.
And this last weekend on PBS, there was a show on a woman named Laster who worked with Dr. Farber of the Farber Clinic. I think it's called the Dana-Farber was the other guy's
name. Oh, yeah. I know you're talking about. Yeah.
Cancer Center. Yeah. And anyway, she was...
For migraines, I use it for, too. Yeah.
Single-handedly, she led the fight against cancer in the mid-20th century and got federal funding and all this stuff. But the point was that when they started getting good money to research beating cancer, they went out and researched every herb. You know, they went and looked for natural cures first.
Right.
So literally, they would go out and get every plant, herb, whatever, and do testing. Mm-hmm. And when you think about what a lot of our drugs now are still a derivative of that.
They are derivative from plants, which is why probably you and I have a slightly different view on this. And we've actually had this conversation before, probably, I don't know, a few dozen times. The problem that happens with just taking the plant itself sometimes, and I'm not discouraging anyone not to ever use plant-based medicine, but often the problem becomes is the purity, the source, and those kinds of things associated with it. Now that, you know, one of the things that Hatch did try to do was try to regulate those components of it. But again, the problem that because the individual plants are not consistently tested for the different compounds that are in them, it's hard to know how much of the actual active substances that may be affecting someone's health or in those the herbal, you know, supplements. So I get that. I get that. But then, you know, the other side is, but that's, you're right. That's where a lot of the medicines did come from. So,
you know, and we're still out there testing and CBD oil. I said to Holly, why don't you get me some?
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, it's $160 a bottle.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's insane. It really is. And fortunately, I don't have much pain, so mm-hmm. there's no point in going through that. But a lot of these, you know, and I hope it works. I mean, you know, I would think that medical marijuana makes all the sense in the world. And if you think about it, the most powerful, probably Utahan ever, and, you know, runs the cancer center at the University of Utah, mm-hmm. is named after him, but in his later years was pushing for medical marijuana.
Yeah.
And, you know, it almost went, I believe the Utah State Senate 2 years ago mm-hmm. passed it, and then it went to the House, and all of a sudden the church realized, holy simole, we got a problem here, and they shut it down.
Well, and this is probably in where a lot of strange different forces come together, and why this gets so convoluted is because this is there's sort of an attitude that runs through a lot of the foundations of the Utah pioneering mentality, this idea of having free agency. And that's partly why nutraceuticals and herbs and alternative medicine has always been popular here. Even though, yes, there's a certain percentage of it that's all snake oil. I'm not, you know, I mean, I get that. But then when it comes to something like this, when we talk about cannabis, it kind of gets thrown under the bus a little bit based upon old stereotypes. And I think it was you, or when I had Gary on a couple of weeks ago, it may have been that, you know, there's so much racism that has been propagated over the last century about marijuana and its and the hazards and the fears about it. I think most people now that have any social and intellectual intelligence about it as a drug realized that this was really a pretty serious con job that was put out by the United States government, and it never should have happened. But you know, there are people that are trying to make a difference, and it's going to end up on the ballot here this fall.
Yeah, and it looks like they've got the signature. Our drug laws are so racist, you know, when it comes to powder cocaine that white people do, it's look the other way. When it's cocaine that blacks do, it puts a lot of people in prison.
Yeah, it's crazy. It is literally crazy. I believe that law which has changed, but I could be wrong. I thought the cocaine got changed to this last.
But I mean, it just, you know, regardless, you know, that's one we're not going to solve. But people involved in the Justice Department are aware of that. Now, unfortunately, we've got Trump in power, so there's going to be no relaxing of that. As a matter of fact, Sessions wants to make penalties much worse.
Yeah.
And ironically push people towards federal, towards the justice system, but have privatized prisons. So shareholders will make money. But
well, and that's you know, we imprison percentage-wise, more people than any other country in the world, and a large percentage of that is drug-related. If anyone probably could use, a little toke, Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump would be, personally, I'd probably put on the top of my list.
So the week that we're doing this show.
Oh, and Mike Pence.
Yeah, what a douchebag. So the week we're doing the show is the week that Rudy Giuliani went on Fox on Wednesday night and said all this shit, which he is probably the truth, that one, Trump paid off Michael Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, they completely changed the story. And then the third day, which is today, Friday, Trump says, Rudy's only been on for a day. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Right.
This thing is a shit show that is just, it gets more amazing by the day.
And shit show, you know, I've heard a lot of people talk about this. It's like we've gotten immunized to the shit show. Every day something.
Everything
new
that he does, any other president, including Nixon would never have survived. I mean, this thing, you know, what we've been talking about the 3 days is, did he or did he not pay his attorney, reimburse his attorney for $130,000 for an affair with a porn star? And we become totally immune to it. It is truly. And
I'm kind of missing Hunter Thompson a little bit right now.
Oh, Hunter S. And he, I remember, I'll tell you a funny story.
And P.J. O'Rourke has written some pretty good stuff about this.
P.J. is wonderful. So your wife, when I was in college, I was a Republican, and I was working for Gerald Ford. And she came to pick me up. And actually, they didn't have their headquarters in Boston, because they actually have Democrats there. So they were out in a rich suburb of Belmont, Massachusetts. And Mary came out to pick me up. We were doing something together, and she walked into the Ford headquarters and just had a swagger about her and said, "The only thing I know about politics is Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail by Hunter S. Thompson." And it was just, it was a marvelous line.
Yeah.
But I've since come around in my politics. But
you have. You
Jeff
have.
Sessions is a douche on a level that is beyond belief. But he did the, you know, occasionally all douchebags, John McCain is the same way. He will do something every once in a while, reminds you that he probably has some decency. And in the case of Jeff Sessions, he recused himself on the whole Russian deal, which brought Mueller in and will eventually cause Trump to lose the presidency. So even douchebags can do the right thing every once in a while.
Everyone can have their moments.
But the Trump thing, I have gotten so incensed over. And, you know, it just, it's one of those situations where in, I guarantee you this, in 2 years, when people read the books about what was going on now, you know, John Kelly, his chief of staff, literally has bragged to people that he's saved war.
Yeah.
Because Trump will instinctively, that's how it's worked. And it's kind of a testimony to all of us that we should be rich. Because if Trump can be rich with not a lot of gifts, then we're all wasting our time.
Yeah, right. But I think this also gets to the point that money does definitely can't buy sanity.
No.
And it doesn't buy happiness. These, I mean, no offense. I mean, I'm going to do a quick full circle here because I really got to take a look at this recently. I was thinking about what am I doing with my life? You know, I mean, this is one of those aha moments,
right?
Well,
you're helping people fight addictions.
Yes.
So you're on the right side of this.
So I get that.
If hell is reserved for timeshare salesmen and Republicans, I would say that if you're helping people with addiction, and you're not charging too much, how much do you charge them?
Well, I you mean me? I see my private clients.
Yeah,
I don't talk about money.
Okay,
but
well,
I usually just charge them the copay, whatever it is.
I mean, okay,
most, the majority of them. Yeah.
But if you're doing that, you're on the right side of things.
Yeah.
You know, and you do when you reach a certain age, you kind of look back and go, you know, I mean, there are a few people like Mother Teresa who don't have this doubt, but the rest of us do. And you know, you wonder, did I? Given the skills that I have, did I maybe waste a few years? You know, the answer is yes.
Well, yeah, but I wouldn't be where I am. I wouldn't have learned all the things I did, if you know. I mean, I don't think I would be as effective in what I do if I hadn't had my own dark night of the soul.
Well, but if you're helping people cure it, I mean, right now in this country, addiction is right up there. And you know, we've got the opioid crisis, which has brought it to light. But think about how much alcohol, drugs have affected people negatively and caused a lot of people not to have the life that they deserve or want.
True.
And in this state, you know, we have an indigenous LDS population, and yet we talked about this in the show a couple of weeks ago. We're one of the highest pill-popping states in the country.
We abuse opiates, we abuse benzos, and we also abuse SSRIs, so we're antidepressant medication. We have the highest rates in all three of those. We kind of battle it out with a few other states with the opiates and benzos, but it's popular. And Adderall. Adderall and Ritalin and, Concerta all are up there, too.
And I noticed with my shoulder replacement that they're very cognizant about the drugs they prescribe, and they're, you know, they really are going to work on it. But all the drugs that you described are all physician prescribed. So, you know, basically what they need to do is circle, put a net over Utah County.
Yeah.
And slow things down. But
it's true. Speaking, this really calls to that whole, I mean, it reminds me of the whole nicotine thing and the tobacco companies in the, what was that, the 60s or 70s. I'm sorry if I don't remember exactly when it was. But I know it kind of went into the 80s. That's probably when finally the payoffs started to come through and the fines came through and all this, that there had been all this cover-up in line and that kind of thing. And the same thing's going to happen, you know, at some point.
Well, actually, we're suing the Oxy, the manufacturer of Oxy, sure. In a lot of states. Yeah.
Simgill, the county attorney.
But, you know, the thing is that what this hastens back to, I should say, is the fact within us we all want to get fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
It feels good. If you're involved in addiction, you realize that. But we want to take a drink. We want to take a pill. We want to take a smoke. I mean, if it makes us feel good, we want to do it. Now, people who don't have this sickness don't feel it. They don't. And I've always been jealous of LDS people because, by and large, they can subjugate that.
Mm-hmm. And for the most part.
Yeah, don't have alcohol abuse. They don't have a lot of the things that... But the rest of the world does.
Well, but, half the clients we have in treatment are LDS. So, I mean, that's maybe true in some ways, but when you actually look at who's getting treatment, as many people in the LDS community... struggle with substance abuse as they do in any other community. So
really,
maybe not as much with alcohol. There's still the stigma there is a little bit different.
But how do you go get pills? I just had a shoulder replaced to get pills. I mean, that was not literally, otherwise, I don't see anyone out there prescribing drugs to people.
Yeah. Well, they do. They still do. And then you also, you also buy them on the streets. It's much more expensive that way, anywhere between, $20 and $50.
What's an Oxy cost?
Anywhere between $20 and $30 on average, yeah.
That, to me, makes no sense.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't give you a high. I mean, so when I got lucky enough, I had the surgery on a Monday, and I was out of the hospital on Tuesday. And then I had a guy bring a piece of equipment over for rehab, and I'd just taken my 10 milligrams, two oxys for the pain,
mm-hmm.
at 1 o'clock, and he called me. He was at my door at like 1:20. I went out, talked to him. He put the machinery together. I don't remember anything. I mean, I remember the guy was a nice guy, and I liked him, and he showed me how to work the machine, but totally clueless. And I called Vita, and I thought it was 4:30. It was 1:30, and I'd just taken the pills, and that's when I decided I need to wean. And fortunately, it was off within a day.
Oh, good.
But, those oxys are not a good feeling. It's not that great. Mm-hmm. Booze is so much better. Mm-hmm. And you get one of these pills for $20 to $30?
Yeah, at least. I mean, sometimes they're
for a 5-milligram pill.
Yeah, and they go up to 60, the 60 or 80 milligrams you can get oxys up to. So,
kidding me. No. That's insane. But, and then, to me, for $5, you can get a bottle of vodka.
Yeah.
It might be 6 or 7, but whatever. That you get a lot more bang for your buck that way.
Well, used to be. You don't drink anymore.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying that, from a...
Not today.
A value, after the show, maybe. But from a value standpoint, but this is not the message that we want to be talking about. As you go forward, what's the prognosis? So you've had a pretty good diet, so that's not going to be a big challenge.
Yeah, so diet, but I have cut out some things. So I'm watching my cholesterol. I'm eating a lot more plant-based than I was before. So I've cut down on certain meats, which I haven't eaten pork and beef since I was 14. So, but I've even cut down a little bit on the chicken. I'm mainly doing fish. I've cut most salt out. I mean, I'm reading labels differently right now. I'm looking at saturated fats and salt. I'm not watching the carbs in quite the same way, but I've always, I'm eating mainly whole foods for.
How can you do exercise wise after?
It just depends. I'm doing walks around the block, and I kind of add some things into that. I played tennis with Caden once for about 20 to 30 minutes. And that was okay. When I told Kristen, because she's out of town at the workshop for a week and a half, and
what
I told
workshop
her,
is she at?
She's at Nine Gates down in California.
What's that?
I don't want to get too much into it, but it's it kind of fits into studying more looking at life a little bit more from an esoteric point of view. A little bit more. I'll just say esoteric.
Okay.
It's teaching about that. It reminds me a little bit of the education I got when I got my first master's at ITP at the time, which is now Sophia University, in transpersonal psychology. It kind of focuses on a little bit outside the norm when it comes to psychology. The fourth wave of psychology was supposed to be more of a spiritual, cultural dynamic when it came to looking how people live and what their belief systems are based upon. Nine Gates is a school that teaches to have a little bit higher understanding of ourselves and the world and our place in that. So when I say it's esoteric, I look at it from a psychological point of view of sort of expanding out into some of these other areas that maybe Jungian psychology and philosophy maybe grew out of 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Maslow, Furman, all these people that kind of came up through the early years of the transpersonal, even Satir, which was Virginia Satir was an amazing family therapist and psychologist who kind of took a little bit different approach, a little bit more open-minded about what different states of consciousness were. I mean, the other side of that would be, maybe some hallucinogenic field, folks like Leary, but that's not what she's doing down there, I don't think. Anyway,
well, God bless. So she must be kind of freaked out
about
to be out of town.
Well, but we had this plan for a long time. This was 6 months in the planning, so or 5 months of it. It's been a while, and so yes, she has been able to actually differentiate and enough that she's been focused on what she's doing there. And we text a little bit, every day or two, and that's going okay. I want to get back to you. You asked me about the medications.
Sure.
And the medications I've noticed, and because going from taking nothing, living kind of this whole foods kind of healthy lifestyle, except for maybe probably exercise. I haven't been exercising as much. I'm more consistent with it now since my heart attack.
That's pretty good incentive to go to the gym.
It's low level exercise at this point. But losing weight too is a big part of this. So, my goal is to drop 30 pounds over the next, 4 to 5 months. I've got about 7-8 off now, since the heart attack. And if I continue doing what I'm doing, I'll drop 5 or so a week and, maybe somewhere 4 to 5, and that's kind of my goal right now. The medications have definitely changed my focus and my energy level. I get a little dizzy sometimes. I don't think I have to be on them forever, but this first few months, probably they'll begin to wean some of the blood thinners off, which I think will help. And maybe, that will help with some of the clarity. But I've also just had sort of a different change about I was working at, 60, 70 hours a week.
How has this affected your work?
My work's been really supportive, for the most part. They do understand that I'm not going to be able to do exactly everything I was doing before, but I was averaging, 50 to 60 hours a week, and I there. And so right now I'm down to under 40 hours, which is nice because I'm only working part time. But I'm never going to go back to what I was. I mean, that was just unhealthy for me, and it was.
Were
stressful.
You on salary?
Yeah.
So they were beating you pretty good.
I guess you could say that. Yeah. Yeah.
And it'd be
but that was me. It was my choice to put as much time into it.
But it'd be ironic for a medical company to have one of their employees have a heart attack and then want the beating to continue.
But I also love what I did. I mean, but this last few months has been really stressful. And so that I think the stress at work compounded with some actual physiological health issues and some untreated hypertension is kind of what led to this. So I kind of look at that, all these pieces coming together, and kind of step back now and go, you know, I've got to look at, you know, making choices that are going to be healthy, you know, for what my health is, so I can be around another 10 to 20 years as long as I do the right things. So,
and that's what the interesting enough, heart, you know, you look at the things that scare you, and cancer is pretty darn scary. Mm-hmm. But heart disease, if they were to come up with a cure for heart disease, it would increase our life expectancy like an insane amount.
Yeah.
4 years, five years. I mean, it's just, it is that, that's the biggest challenge we have. And you know, there are all those components. And it's weird for people who don't take good care of them themselves. They love it when a healthy guy gets a heart attack. That is, that's chum in the water for them. So you see all the, so recently there was a trainer, very famous TV trainer, and I forget his name, who had a heart attack. Uh-huh. And the people who don't care, take care of themselves, are just loving it.
Uh-huh.
You know, see, you know, and, but it's a percentage game. The better you take care of yourself. I mean, you know, genetically you don't know. And, you know, we've got the guy with the greatest genes in the world is a fat piece of shit who weighs 260 pounds and is our president. And, you know, everyone's wondering if why is he doing so well? And it's probably genetics. Mm-hmm. Horrible diet, way overweight, doesn't exercise. And why does he have to be healthy at 71?
We don't know if that's actually true now. he wrote his own doctor's letter.
And I love it. They show his Bornstein, his previous physician, who literally looks like the guy who
Mike Myers played him on some show the other
day. Yeah, I heard that. And so he looks like that old comedian who used to be on Match Game. He really does. Anyways, a comedian who used to punch up jokes for the Oscars, and I wish I remember his name, but he looks like the insane one. So they put up a picture of the Admiral, and then they put up the picture of the insane guy and go, who turned out to be the one giving out pills?
Yeah, right.
So
right.
You can never
tell. The good-looking guy, right. Oh, good-looking, normal guy. Yeah.
Ronnie Jackson, and he was Trump's physician, and you know, it's truly insanity. So as you go forward, you have something like this. Do you go maybe 4 or 5 hours and don't say, shit, I had a heart attack? Do you put it out of your mind? And then
I do.
And then when you come to the realization that you had a heart attack, does it kind of scare you for a sec? Or how does that affect you?
I don't know if it's scaring me right now, Trip, but what it definitely has changed my consciousness, because sometimes at work, I worked, I think, 3 full days this week for me, you know, worked, you know, 8 to 9 hours. And then I worked 1 4- or 5-hour day. And what I noticed was on the 4 or 5-hour day was like, I was more tired at the end of that 4 or 5 hours than I was of the 8 or the 9 hours. So you know what I'm saying? So it's like a cumulative. And those are the moments I go, this is definitely a change in lifestyle for me. I need to be really aware and conscious of what I'm doing, because I think it's easy to kind of get this behind me a little bit and start thinking, oh, you know, I'm back. Yeah, I'm back. And no, I mean, I've made you know, the dietary changes, the continue to work on my weight, and continue to do some type of daily exercise, and then work into doing some cardio. What I noticed, though, with the exercises, I have to be really careful because I do get dizzy. And I know part of that's the medication.
So skydiving?
Yeah, skydiving probably not for now. No, but, you know, I won't rule it out completely.
Okay. Well, you might want to do a static jump. When you – so you and I are about the same age. Does it – you have something like this that is kind of life-changing and stuff. How do you focus on your relationships with people? How do you focus on your relationship with your clients?
Yeah.
How do you ever feel like you don't want to phone anything in?
So that's a really good question. I definitely look at relationships differently, right, with my friends. Whether it sounds a little corny to say, but this idea of mortality has shifted my lens a little bit, to the point where I'm looking at the quality of my friendships, and I want to be around the people that I love and I care about and that I like to laugh with. So hence you're here.
Well, plus, again, you know, if you go into cardiac arrest, the show will have a smooth landing.
That's right. I know.
This will not be like the Southwest plane. We are not going to shoot down to 10,000 feet. You know, we'll continue my story, call 911, and then get out.
Yeah.
There's a beginning, middle, and end of every podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And so I'm probably looking at that differently and in some ways doing my very best to, you know, stay open and vulnerable with people, to be as honest and open as I can be. And then if I've had people in my life that, you know, maybe didn't really, in some ways weren't healthy for me.
Time sucks.
I'm probably looking at, you know, maybe wanting to change some of those dynamics.
Because I think that when you have something like this, you realize that the one commodity that, regardless how rich, famous, happy you are, as compared to someone who's just life sucks, time is the one constant. You only have that much time.
That's true.
We just had a gentleman come through the front door. Would you assume that he'd be friend or foe?
I have no idea. Shall we pause for one sec?
Why don't we do that? You're listening to Just Another Bozo on the Bus. Trip Mitchell, the guest this week. Paul Randack, still the host, and that's a good thing.
All right. Welcome back.
The question is, did the coming out of break seem more professional than the going into break? So in my older life, when I started in radio, I literally was doing sports talk radio, and you would have five breaks an hour, and you had to hit them perfect because it was on a network. So you had 100 plus stations around the country, and you had to get out at perfect time. And that's the hardest skill of doing. I tell people, radio is easy. Uh-huh. Getting in and out of a break, because you'll ask a question, and you don't want to ask a long question before you've got a hard out in like a minute.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of an art form. And once you learn how to get in and out of breaks, the rest of it's easy.
The rest of it's easy.
Of course, on the other hand, I've been fired at three different networks, so maybe I should have concentrated on more. I was very good at the breaks, but maybe the talk in the middle was not good.
Maybe you're just full of shit the rest of the time.
Yeah,
but
maybe
boy,
I should have worked.
His intro and outro is smooth.
Well, when I used to imbibe on the air, we moved to a new studio, and it was really funny. This was like a state-of-the-art studio in Vegas, but it was in a shitty neighborhood. And I got in trouble with the owner of the network because the first day we're moving over, this thing had a hot tub, sauna, racquetball court in our studio. It was amazing. And the owner of the network was just a horrible person. But literally moving in and two homeless guys are fighting with a cinder block in the parking lot.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and but that being said, so we'd have a hard out on the network at, it was called the American Sports Network, at 3 minutes of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were back at five. So we had eight solid minutes. We'd run over to the bar, do a shot and a beer, and then run back to do the show. And one day I was feeling no pain, so I would take us back. And then the guys would talk, take callers, or do interviews. And I'd be just kind of snoozing in my chair, and they'd tap me. We got a break coming up, and I would do that. So for those of you at home, don't do alcohol. The one time, and I know the show is about addiction, so I'll tell you.
It's about a lot of things.
We had a telestrator, and a telestrator is the device when you're watching a football game that the color analyst will use where they freeze the – they'll go back and show the two teams at the line of scrimmage, mm-hmm. and then analysts can draw – the routes that the receivers run or the blocking patterns or whatever.
Yeah.
And if you're drawing dicks on a live football game, you know you're doing wrong. So I'm literally drawing penises on the telestrator. And
A proud moment for you.
it was great. And there's a Netflix series about
Well, there's Silicon Valley. I know you just started watching it.
Oh,
but there is a drawing of a dick in this season.
It is brilliant.
Oh, you've seen it already?
Yes, I have.
For the name of the box three or whatever it's called, and
the Hooli box.
Yeah, the Hooli box three.
That's named after Gavin or what? Oh shoot,
I don't know.
But yeah, and this guy is basically Steve Jobs' character. Silicon Valley is brilliant. But this other series, it's on Netflix, and it's about a vandal who drew penises on all the teachers' cars. And they do a mockumentary documentary about it that is brilliant. And, okay, I'm changing subjects for a second. What a great time to be alive to consume media.
Yeah, we did talk a little bit about this last time.
Yeah,
it is true. It is true. Yeah.
You know, and I was looking forward to being, and God bless, I was able to get up and drive after two. I thought I wouldn't be able to drive for a month. That's some of the stories with a replaced shoulder. Yeah, and so I assumed that I'd be sitting watching, and I had all these series that I was going to catch up on.
Oh, man.
And I was going to binge watch, and that I didn't watch one of them.
Seriously?
Okay. Yeah, so when you're on Oxy, you sleep. Mm-hmm. And once you got off that, I could drive, so there's no reason to sit around and go, you know, let's go do something even if it's wrong. But, it, you know, when you see one of these series...
You don't always know it's wrong at the time.
No.
I know that's not true, but...
There is a great T-shirt company that does some of the most brilliant T-shirts out there, and the best one is... So it's a slogan on a T-shirt... That's a horrible idea. What time?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's funny because people can communicate, circling back to TV, there are 422 new scripted shows this year where a writer comes up with an idea, can get funding, hires everyone involved. You know, it takes to do a scripted TV series, 100 people. Let's say it's 6 episodes. That's work for 100 different people from, you know, the people doing craft services up to the writer, director, showrunner. So it's a pretty cool time to be in a creative environment like that. And, you know, I know you as a musician and be a creative person. It's a pretty great time to be alive.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, as you're lying there in the hospital going, shit, I'm only 4 episodes into Silicon Valley.
I didn't turn the TV on once in the hospital.
You didn't. That is a wonderful thing. Yeah. Well, I need to get shooting.
Okay. So real quick, first of all, thank you for coming. This also, one of the things I talk about with all my guests, we talked about you last time. You know, if you had a playlist, remember, you know, you'd have it your life celebration. Yeah. So I'm going to do my. I'm going to tell you what my song would be because we're going to go out with it today.
Okay. Have you paid the music rights?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you remember 37 years ago,
Pat Metheny?
No. We did a commercial for Paracelsus.
Yeah.
In San Francisco, and you used one of your favorite bands for the music. And you you never paid the music rights, and they were in San Francisco.
Oh shit! I don't.
Do you remember this story?
I don't.
You did a radio ad in. You bought time on a station in San Francisco, and the band turned the radio on one day and heard their music, and they sent us a letter, and it was no big deal.
Oh, that's funny. I don't remember that
because I did that to the Killers.
Because I did that because we had Pat Metheny. You know, I did have some of his music. And what I got the rights to use it.
Okay. Yeah. So the Killers, remember their first big hit, looks like a lady, I forget the name. But the Killers are from Vegas. Mm-hmm. And we used that for our bump music because the owner of the station said he paid ASCAP BMI.
Yeah.
And he was full of it.
Yeah.
And Nathan is my attorney to this day. We're having lunch next week. He never paid that. Yeah. So the Killers, you know, they turn on this TV station and they hear their new hit song, and they were all excited about it. I'd heard from Brandon later through a friend that he was excited to hear his music on TV because they were just starting.
Uh-huh.
And then their management checked and realized that we hadn't paid, and so that got a cease and desist letter.
Well, I've every podcast goes out with Joan Osborne. You know, just...
But it's interesting because I listen to a lot of ESPN podcasts, and this Mike and Mike in the Morning, and it's been changed now. But they'll be playing a song because music's a big part of their show, but you don't hear it on the podcast. So you see it on TV because, boy, we're getting into the weeds on this one. But music licensing is different for podcasts. So I just want to warn you here.
No, it is. And the reason why I say that is... to get the rights to use,
Joan Osborne.
Yeah, Joan Osborne. I had to pay the I had to pay for, I think it's for 1,500 downloads at a time or something like that. I can't remember exactly.
Because it's much fairer because it is by the amount of listeners and downloads. How much did you have to pay for that?
It was $63.
$63. Joan, we're all licensed and paid up. Who do you pay? ASCAP's, BMI, or CSAC?
It goes through a... for digital purposes, I went through a different company, and they pay each person individually. So they pay the she gets a portion, and the person who wrote the song, which I can't remember his name, I want to say Tony Visconti or something like that, but he gets a portion too. So she
remember Seeger, who used to say he would pay his bandmates equal money, uh-huh. And someone said to him, "Well, you're crazy. You're the star," and he goes, "I write the music."
Yeah, right.
And I don't know how much he made from Like a Rock was on every Chevy commercial for 10 years.
Right.
I mean, that the amount of money on licensing, that is really where the money is at.
Yeah. Well, Robert Hunter, who wrote half the Dead songs.
Sure, just passed away.
Yeah, just passed away. Yeah.
And the Dead never sold out. But anyway, what is your song?
The one that was on the top of my list and always has been is a real classic R&B song. Probably got famous also through disco. It's Got to Be Real by Cheryl Lynn. And that's what we're going to go out with today.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I will have you, our next podcast, I'll have you down for Let's Do Something Even If It's Wrong. We're launching a new podcast on Monday.
Oh.
You Can Have It All.
You Can Have It All.
Just not at the same time.
Okay. How do people listen to your podcast?
So our podcast, Let's Do Something Even If It's Wrong, it's available on iTunes, and it is a horrible podcast with horrible people, and we're proud of it.
I'm looking forward to that. I can't wait. All right, Tripp, thanks so much. This has been great to get together again, and thank you for coming so I can talk about sort of what the last few weeks have been like for me as a life-changing
You know, it's totally impacted, and I think the one lesson that I've gotten out of the show is that realize that you're around for a finite amount of time, so take advantage of all your... No one is ever laid in bed, you know, as the life is dripping out of them and said, "God damn it, I wish I'd worked harder."
And with that, we'll talk to you all soon. Thank you.